How many of you are familiar with the Velveteen Rabbit story from childhood? Somewhat vaguely enough, I don't know if you remember all of it that well. I am notoriously bad at getting stories somewhat right, but not really the details. And so, and this will come into play a little bit further in the sermon. So let me read to you some of this from the Velveteen Rabbit. "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side near the nursery fender before Nana came to tidy the room. "Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" "Real isn't how you are made," said the skinned horse. "It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real." "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Sometimes," said the skinned horse, for he was always truthful. "When you are real, though, you don't mind being hurt." "Does it happen all at once? Like being wound up?" he asked, "or bit by bit?" "It doesn't happen all at once," said the skinned horse. "You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't happen often to things or to people who break easily or have sharp edges or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes drop out and you get all loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter much at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly except to people who you don't understand you." I'm not sure if it's true or not, but I don't remember knowing that story as a child. The truth is, I don't have a great memory. You can tell me something, and you might have to tell me 15, 20 times before I pick it up. My partner knows that well. Some of my staff members know that well. You'll often see me writing down notes so that I can go back to it, for I've learned some of those skill sets to adapt, but I don't remember sometimes all that well, and so I don't remember growing up with this story. But I do remember the first time it made real sense to me. The first time hearing it aloud in a room not too different from this, with other people seemingly being made real. That process of having some of the things pulled at us and broken off, of becoming loved bit by bit, is the process of life. And so often we can struggle with, is it better to stay carefully kept in the box or to let things break off, whether body parts or soul parts? I first remember hearing the story at a program I did in high school down at Candler School of Theology in Atlanta, Georgia. It was a program where we learned a lot about ourselves as individuals and about the world around us. We were called in that program to become public theologians, to engage the world with something bigger than ourselves, and yet we could only do that once we cared about who we were and knew that person. I didn't know it at the time. In fact, I have to be honest with you, because we're in church and I'd get struck by lightning if I didn't, I think. I haven't thought of this term before this exact moment, but looking back, I think that program was a little like ministry boot camp. It was a summer-long experience that was all about religion and a diverse, intentionally built community where, in many ways, we were broken and pulled together, in part so that we can make a world better than the one we had. Hearing the story of the Velveteen Rabbit was just one of those pieces that summer that inched me ever so closer to being real and finding some peace with that. Another of the stories of my memory that's never quite perfect comes from that same program. I held in my hand this little book. There was a time, each of you knows it because we're all, at least my age or older, There was a book, and it was important because we didn't have the internet at that point. It had been a lecture given by Nancy Island. Nancy was one of the most foremost scholars on disability and religion in America. Frankly, not a lot of people did that work, but Nancy had something real about her, and she spoke and taught at Candler, and so she had given this lecture, printed it out, and during this program, several of us got a copy given in the class we were in. I remember reading that book. We had an assignment about it. Many months and years later, I would tell a story about it. And this is the story I would tell in a sermon I did at my home congregation. I would say, Nancy Island, disabled activist and theologian, tells the story of making peace with her body. She herself had disabilities, but over time she struggled with what it was like to be in that body, but eventually found some acceptance, some comfort, and felt okay. Not just okay, but embraced who she was. Before long, she was doing an interview with someone, and they asked about whatever it was her disability was, and she got a little self-conscious about it. Nancy told her partner later, "I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know what's going on." And she kept worrying about this and fretting that the interviewer was taking it too far and making her look bad. And the partner reflected to her and said, "I thought you made peace with that." And Nancy said, "I had." She went on to talk about how making peace with something doesn't mean that peace is lasting. That story was critical to my life. I held on to it because it spoke to me in very real ways. So many times I make peace, but then lose it. Perhaps you know what that's like too. So, some years later, I thought, I love this reading. It's sitting on my desk in my office here at Brew. I'm going to flip through it again. I want to find it so I could cite it correctly in my manuscript. It's not there. Not exactly, at least. So I'm trying to look some more on the internet now, which I can just search, and I'm typing Nancy Island story, thought you made peace, and it's nowhere. But something else comes up. It's a story about Alice Walker talking to her partner, much the same details about making peace with it. So I go back to the actual text I have, and sure enough, Nancy's recounting a story from Alice Walker. This is all about some other third person that in my mind I have just written out of the story, lost the details of. But it almost didn't matter because there was an essential truth that I held on to. Whatever those truths are for us is important. Finding them, whether in stories, children's stories, whether in big theological talks, whether in classes, whether at the beach or in nature, finding something to help us make peace or remake it is important. And so I give thanks to Alice Walker and Nancy Island for getting me that story and helping me look past just tolerance of myself, whatever it is, to move towards something deeper. I think for many of us, tolerance was what we were taught we should do. In school, at least, that was the right thing. I remember specifically first and second grade teachers talking about just being tolerant of one another, and that's the culture we built in America. That was the good thing, and in some ways is a good thing. But tolerance can also be limited. It can be a way to not really see the depths of whatever it is you're looking at, whether it's yourself or someone else. Peggy Leavitt, and by the way, I did check all of these citations, so they are accurate for once. Peggy Leavitt said, "Tolerance is living side by side. It's sort of separate but equal. Acceptance, sort of, but not engagement. Pluralism," Peggy says, "means willing to be changed and change. It's a level of listening and interacting with one another far beyond just coexisting in the same room, but co-collaborating, co-creating, doing something holy and sacred. By moving towards true acceptance in our worlds, not expecting a certain thing, but by allowing life to be what it is, we recognize a fuller humanity. And that can be difficult. I wouldn't ask you to raise your hand, but how many of us have a hard time, at least some days, with what they see in the mirror? There are days I kind of skip past. You did. That's very gracious of you. It's true for me too. Days I skip past, not sure I want to stop and look. It's hard sometimes. I think of Sylvia Plath's poem Mirror, where she talks about the mirror reflecting just as it is, unmisted by love or dislike, not cruel, only truthful. In many ways, that's an experience of life that can be harder for us. When people are cruel to us, we know that, and we know we can set that aside for what it is. When people are great to us because of love, we know that too. But the rawness of a mirror, of just knowing what life is, no more and no less, can be hard to get to. It takes some spiritual discipline and some acceptance of whoever it is we are in this moment, knowing that that person may not be who we were as a child, a young adult, or we will be as an elder. Each of our lives take different courses over time. The question is, how do we figure that out? A couple stories in my own life of how I figured that out. There are a couple things some of you may know, may have heard over the past year or so that I've been here, maybe you haven't. One of the things is that right after I started college, I was diagnosed with a type of muscular dystrophy and some hip problems. And at first, this was limiting. One of my bucket list items was to run a marathon. And so in the first few years after this and really recognizing some muscle loss, I thought, I'm never going to get to do that, and certainly only tolerated that self, that piece of the self that was limited. Like Nancy Island, I connected to that. It's hard to let go of the body and wonder where God is in giving us bodies that are imperfect. Letting go of the marathon, this great achievement that for some reason all people who seem healthy and fit want to go after, was especially hard. And so 15 or so years after I was first diagnosed, I decided I'm not going to do the marathon, but I can do a 5K. I can do that. With a couple months training ahead of me, I registered in Chicago for the Hot Chocolate 5K. And let me tell you, if you're gonna run 5 kilometers, you really should do it for hot chocolate and chocolate fondue. It was a good thing to have at the end of a race. That September and October before the race in November, I worked a little bit at running. I tried it out. I'd get a little far, I'd sort of work on my time, but not so much. I talked to other runners, and they said, well, especially with marathons, you don't often go the full distance, so don't push yourself too far, you can do it. The day of the 5K, I wasn't so sure I was up to it. I intentionally went to the very back of the starting line. People line up at these races in order of how fast they run. So I went back to the ones who thought they may not finish. It was an exhilarating experience then to pass people, to run past them, feeling like I not only met something head on, but really exceeded my goal. You'd think in some way this would be this great message about striving and getting the gold ring. I finished the race. In fact, my partner, Sarah Getty, who is a runner and a marathoner, came back and asked if I wanted her to run with me. And I was like, no, no, go away. I'm good. I'm good. So I kept going. I finished it. I felt really good. Maybe the endorphins, the adrenaline, the chocolate. We went home that day. Still felt pretty good. But over the next 2 or 3 weeks, I could not move. I couldn't move. My muscles hurt, my bones hurt, and in some way my heart hurt, because I had recognized that I did something a little foolish, pushing beyond what I should have or what I needed to do because I felt like I should do something. That there was an expectation there that I really placed on myself, society in some part places with us, but really me. And I just pushed too far. I let go that day, those weeks, of the marathon. I had always thought, like, maybe I could get there. Nope, I'm done. No more running. I will gladly stand on the sidelines and cheer. And that's a piece. Sometimes it takes us truly getting hurt, physically or emotionally, sometimes spiritually, to making that place of acceptance. One other time in my life that's an important lesson of this really stretches in from childhood. When I was younger, I was a very conservative Christian. That's the church I grew up in, and really believed, like many people do, in God and the power of prayer. I would pray, especially as an adolescent, every day, sometimes multiple times a day, that God would take certain things away from me. Sometimes it was the struggles of the life I was in, the family life, and sometimes the poverty, and sometimes my religious doubts, and sometimes my thoughts of being attracted to both men and women. I really, really thought that God would send me to hell for that. And so for many years, I struggled with that. And it was at the program I talked about earlier, you know, ministry boot camp. In that place, in that beloved, intentional community, that I was given the grace to not just tolerate who I was, but to accept it. I've told people before of this great moment, not where one of the mentors, not one of the seminary professors or seminary-trained ministers shared this, but one of my peers, another 15, 16-year-old, pointed out that when we deny who we truly are, we are, in fact, thumbing our nose at the gifts we have been given. And in that moment, I could see a shift, a break, sunlight coming through where I was no longer tolerating myself as someone who had this identity as possibly interested in two sexes, but accepting myself as someone who is bisexual. For many people who are LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, that piece of praying so hard for it to end and only tolerating it has been there. Moving to acceptance can be difficult. And so finding a way, especially in our religious community, to help us as individuals get there is imperative. Henri Nouwen, one of the great writers and mentors, talks about how do we do this within ourselves? How do we find some peace between all of the identities that we are? He writes of letting our lion lay down with our lamb. It's a play off the biblical metaphor, and he understands our personal lion as our adult decision-making self, whereas our lamb is the vulnerable self. He writes that it's only when we heed our lion, what it is that we have become as an adult, the things that we can somewhat actively choose and take on, only then, when we can live into that and into what we were as a vulnerable child growing, that we can know our power, our limitations, and to find some acceptance in both. Every day we struggle with this. Every day we grow and age, and it changes. Sarah Moore Campbell, a UU minister, writes in The Wisdom to Know the Difference about this. She writes, aging is a lifelong process of adjustment to change. The people who age the best are those who are granted serenity, as the famous prayer puts it, the serenity to accept the things they cannot change, courage to change the things they can, and wisdom to know the difference. Getting older, she writes, is one of those things that cannot be changed. The losses are different for different people. Sometimes it means giving up possessions or a smaller home. Sometimes it means giving up independence or losing physical ability. Gradually, age reminds us that we can't do the things we once could do. It forces us to redefine ourselves in terms of what we can do. It's an art to be able to grow through the losses of life and accept the process. It's a process of growth, really, not of decline. Think about it. The people that we think who age well, they are the ones who often it's hard to see the difference in how they were earlier than now because they appear so vital and engaged in life. It's important then, she writes, to avoid pretending that it's still summer and instead enjoying the realities of the autumn season of life and the beautiful colors that we have earned. So many of us struggle with this somewhat in our life. In different ways. Maybe it's about how we grew up, maybe it's about the jobs we have now, our education, our faith, our age, our bodies, who we love. Maybe it's about any number of pieces of our identity, how we speak up, how we are with our siblings. But there is a shared common experience of wrestling with accepting who we are with no more and no less. No extra bravado, and no extra shame either. Back to Henry Nouwen. He suggests that we acknowledge our limitations, but claim our unique gifts and live as equal among equals. Imagine for a moment. Imagine a world in which we can all do that, where that's the lesson we teach our children. And if you're a frog, and your life is to catch flies, that's it. You don't have to be a wise owl or a pig. If you're called to do something in the world, do that. Embrace it for what it is. So often in life, we can think we need to do something else, that we should be doing something else, whether we should have a promotion, we should do more things, should buy more things. One of my favorite things to think about, one of my colleagues offered, was that perhaps we too often should all over ourselves. Should all over ourselves? Do you should on yourself sometimes? It just gets all over that sense of shame and what we should be doing. Trying to let that go, standing in the state of falling short of who we're called to be is powerful. Can you imagine what it is? For me, it's grace. That's what that is. Grace strikes us. We are called to meet ourselves with love, for each of us are to be real, and in so doing, we can help others. So often, as Unitarian Universalists, we think about these sorts of issues like this, and we think about our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of each person, and it's a fair point from birth where each do the same amount of humanity. But if you know our principles, I invite you to look at the last. The seventh UU principle reminds us that we are to respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Often when that principle is spoken in worship or in small groups, in RE classrooms, for adults and children, we use it to talk about the world out there. How we're called to take care of it. It's true in some way, but we miss the fine print. Just like the commandment to love our neighbors as ourselves, this religious principle holds us accountable for treating ourselves well. If we truly respect the interdependent web of life of which we are a part, then we will find a way to do more than simply tolerate the pieces and parts of our lives. We will, in fact, accept and embrace them. What good does a peacemaking mission around the world do if we cannot make peace in our own hearts? We are all connected in ways great and small, and how we choose to think and talk about ourselves affects those around us more than we can tell. And so this morning, I invite you to think about your story, to start to piece it together, the times that you may have made peace with something and then let go of it, and to reclaim it again. I leave you again with these words from Iolo Achille. Remember, Oppression thrives off isolation. Connection is the only thing that can save us. Remember that oppression thrives on superficiality. Honesty about our struggles is the key to our liberation. Remember, your story can help save someone's life. Your silence can contribute to someone else's struggle. Speak so that all may be free. Love so that we can all be liberated. The moment is now. We need you. Amen and blessed be.